Welcome to the Mind Blown Podcast, where curiosity leads and discoveries follow. I'm Melanie Avalon, biohacker, author, and health influencer. And I'm joined by Scott Immens, entrepreneur, health enthusiast, and seeker of the unknown. Together, we're here to take you on a journey to the very edges of science, technology, philosophy, history, and beyond. Did you know in the minute it takes to introduce this podcast, thousands of flights will take off, around 6 million Google searches will be conducted, and 360,000 photos will be uploaded to Instagram, and at the end of 90 minutes, the space station will have orbited completely around Earth. Also, according to Einstein's theory of relativity, time doesn't pass at the same speed for everyone, depending on how fast you're moving. Or how about the idea of quantum superposition? That's that particles can actually be two places at once. So is this actually happening right here, right now? One last fun fact that actually inspired the genesis of this show. If you remember Tinkerbell dotting the I in the Walt Disney logo, that never happened. So on that note, get ready for our adventure on today's Mind Blown Podcast. Hi, friends. Welcome back to episode 2 of the Mind Blown Podcast. I am so excited to be here. I am Melanie Avalon. I'm here with my partner in crime, Scott Immens. Not actual crime. We are upstanding citizens, I promise. Scott, I want to say how are you today, but I don't want to because we'll go on tangents. And we also had a lot of technical...
Agreed. We both know that's not going to be a good idea.
Yeah, so I'm not going to ask Scott how he is, but just...
It also took us an hour to get started today.
It did.
So.
It did. So, on that note, shall we start with our mind-blowing facts?
Yes. So my mind-blowing fact, which truly blew my mind, I think I've actually told you this in the distant past, so it might not blow your mind as much today, but there is a phenomena, a factual scientific phenomena called sonoluminescence, which is the fact that sound can actually create light.
Okay. Yeah. You have told me this before, but let me take it in as like never having heard it. Okay. Sound can create light. What type of sound?
So it is basically ultrasonic frequencies or incredibly fast penetration that causes similar ultra frequencies in some kind of fluid or gel, for example, causes a cavitation or an implosion. And that creates this thermal energy inside the bubble, which collapses and causes a weak emission of light. It was first discovered as far back as 1934. And you can observe this in a bubble, what's called a sonoluminescent bubble, or SBSL. And the exact mechanism behind this sonoluminescence to this day remains unknown. However, there are some theories, including what they call Bernstrahl radiation argon refraction hypothesis, which essentially is saying that the temperature exceeds 12,000 degrees Kelvin or 12,000 Kelvins, which is essentially like as hot as the sun, but for like a billionth of a second. Now, what's even more fascinating is that there is a crab in nature that when it snaps its claw, moves its claw so quickly in the ocean and makes such a loud noise that it creates this sonoluminescence, stunning its prey for moments while it grabs it.
I wonder if that crab was in Jackie Higgins' book, Sentient, which I highly recommend to listeners. I'm trying to remember. She talks
Would
about...
Would you like me to look up the name of the crab?
If you like.
Okay. What do you think? I mean, sound creating light. That's pretty cool stuff.
But the thing is, it's not the actual sound. It's the sound affecting a material and the material creating light, right? Or a medium, right? So it's not like the sound becomes light. The sound affects the gel that creates energy that becomes light, right?
Well, that's the theory. But again, they don't really know what creates the light. But the fact that a sound in any medium can create light is kind of pretty wild. And if you think about it, if you're religious at all and you read the first thing, doesn't it say God spoke or the word of God or something like that? And then there were, let there be light. Isn't that the first like words he says?
Oh,
Right. So think about that. That's kind of powerful.
That is. Oh, yeah. That is kind of cool.
Right. Yeah. So you're like, oh, how did he just speak light? Well, space maybe has a medium called plasma, or I don't know, but let there be light, and boom, there was light. And then for a crab to be able to use it is also pretty cool.
That's actually, out of that whole thing, the mind-blowing, I think the most mind-blowing part was the crab. I mean, that's a mighty snap.
It's a mighty snap. It definitely is.
Wow. Can you have that crab as a pet?
And I wouldn't.
Did you have a question? Did you go through the hermit crab pet phase?
Of course. I think everybody.
Does everybody go through the hermit crab pet phase? Everybody. Did you have the moment where you realized, oh, they actually kind of look like spiders? And then they became scary.
I mean, it was a brief moment, but yeah, there was a little bit of creep factor. If you kind of zoomed in on them, you're like, ooh, that's a creepy looking thing.
I totally forgot about my hermit crabs.
Yeah. And then they die and they smell. That's no good.
Yeah. I don't, what's funny about them is like, if I think back on like hamsters, like I really remember beginning, middle, end, them being there, taking care of them. But my hermit crab memory is just like, yeah, we had hermit crabs at one point.
Now, where did you get your hermit crab? From the pet store or like an amusement park kind of thing?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
When I was growing up, when you went to the shore, the Jersey Shore, or you went down to South Carolina for like a beach trip, that was, you always came home with a hermit crab.
Oh, maybe we did get them at, I remember getting like goldfish at the, our wonderful goldfish ping pong. And I'm pretty sure we won in like a ping pong thing. Tell you really briefly about ping pong? Ping pong was a treasure of a goldfish, and he was very large. He got very large, and he was lazy. And one time we thought he died, and my mom started like draining like the tank, but he was just like asleep in his little hut for like days because he was so lazy that he would just sit there. Ping pong was great.
Well, I feel sad that Ping Pong is no longer with us.
I do too. And I also really wanted a turtle very badly.
I wanted a turtle, but mom vetoed the turtle.
Were they legal in your state?
They were back then. That was Jersey.
Mm.
I did have a betta fish named Norm that I put in a Cheers mug.
Oh, the betta fish. Yes. Mm. Did you have two?
Well, no, because they killed each other.
Well, but you have two and they're in two different things and then you put them together and then you watch them freak.
Yeah, they freak. I think they are also called like Japanese or Siamese.
Shouldn't they be called the alpha fish then, since they do that, you know?
What's interesting is those fish that fight are female fish. They're not the male ones.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. But I had one and I named her Norm and put it in a Cheers mug. And it lived in a Cheers mug for 2 years. I would put it in my car.
In a mug?
Hold it. In a mug. Yeah.
Just in that mug?
Just in that mug. It lived for two and a half years. And I would drive it back and forth from college in the Cheers mug. Like if I had a Christmas break, I'd put it in the car and in the cup holder, drive Norm home.
Wait, was it happy in the mug?
Yeah. I mean,
that seems like a small living environment.
Well, it was, but I was a college kid, so I didn't have like, you know, a lot of space. So the mug was it. But when I would walk in the room, it would swim to the top. Norm would swim to the top and like wait for its food. So like it recognized me like as I walked in the room. Pretty cool.
Man. So it was Norm. It was a female. But it was a female?
Yeah, Norma. I should now rename her.
Yeah.
Norma. Yeah. But you know, you could go gender neutral with Norm. Okay. So back to the crab real quick. Okay. So here's this crab. So.
You can just tell me the name.
Ah, okay. The crab is nicknamed the pistol crab, and its grabbing claw is three times bigger than its other claw, and it causes this sonoluminescence, and it stuns the prey, and then once the prey is sort of stunned from that blast, then it kills it and eats it. They also say they use this noise and its claw to communicate.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I'm making a note. That reminds me I will not do it this episode. It's too related, but a mind-blown fact for a future episode. Would you like to hear my mind-blown fact?
Of course. Well, Are we rating our facts this episode?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So
okay.
I'm going to give you a multi-number rating.
Okay. I think I know why. Do you want me to tell you why I think I know why?
Sure.
Okay. I think you're going to give me a multi-rating because the sun luminescence itself, maybe not so fascinating, but perhaps the combined with the crab and God thing, maybe it has a different connotation.
Yeah, essentially. So the thing itself, if the sound didn't make the gel become the light, if it was just like sound, light, that would be like a solid 9. But the fact that it's the sound makes the gel turn into the light, slides down a little bit. Still mind-blowing, but I think I'd give it like a 6. However, that crab, I'm putting that crab at an 8.5.
I'll take the mixture. I like the blend. The only thing I think that makes it bigger than a 6 on just the light, or the sound to light, is even though it requires a media, I still think that in and of itself is cool because they have no idea how it happens. There's no real theory to this day. That's what's in it. Like, you think if it was just, it's just a media and it does this and that. Okay, simple, we explained it. But they really can't explain it.
Yeah, the book I'm reading right now, it's called What's Gotten Into You? The Story of Your Body's Atoms from the Big Bang Through Last Night's Dinner. It's a very, very deep dive into the history of molecular physics and astronomy and the world and every particle ever in existence. And my takeaway is that we just have a lot of theories about how everything works and we have no idea about anything.
I have to agree with you on that. I think we know a lot more than we do.
Yeah, that book is blowing my mind about like protons and...
What's it called?
What's Gotten Into You? It's by Dan Levitt. I will be interviewing him on the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. Plug. So.
I will be listening to the episode very intently because it also, that has a lot to do with what we're about to talk about today.
I know. Oh, no, Scott, I told you. This is the one where I texted you and I was like, they're talking about stuff. He talks about stuff that we're going to talk about. Here, I'll give you my.
We're going to talk about.
Yes. Okay, I'm going to set up my mind-blowing fact because I think you're going to maybe discredit the rating a little bit because you're going to be like, well, that's not that mind-blowing. But it's kind of mind-blowing because I don't think anybody realizes this. So I find it very mind-blowing.
I include that in the score. Like, okay, that's part of the score.
Okay, so I wonder if you know this. You know, when you're in your car at the gas station and let's say you're in a rental and you don't know what side the gas is on,
mm-hmm.
or maybe you forgot in your own car.
Right.
Did you know you can immediately find out?
Wow. I should know this.
I know. I don't think anybody knows this. I didn't know this.
This is one of those very odd, but you should know it facts.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I think.
Yeah.
You could immediately know.
Like, as immediately as, like, very immediately.
Oh, my God. No, I don't know.
So, you know the little gas icon? Like, the little fuel pump mm-hmm. icon?
Yeah.
There's an arrow on it that points to the side that it's on.
Son of a biscuit. Wow.
Yep.
I've probably looked at that little light 1,000 times, that little arrow.
I know.
I was going to guess that you had to like click on the fuel setting and it would show you, but then you said immediate. So
yeah,
no, didn't know that.
It's like part of the official, I know.
I mean, that's so intuitive now, but I would have never guessed and I guarantee you.
And so helpful.
So helpful.
Why didn't we learn this in driving school?
You want to know what's crazy? Just today, I was driving my wife's car and I'm like, which side is that on again? She's like, the left.
You could have just looked.
That just happened today. I know.
Wait, really?
I'm going to blow people's mind and I'm going to like, I know which side your tank is on.
Oh, I know.
They're like, how do you know? I'm like, because I know every car. I always know. And they're like, you can't possibly know. Yeah.
No, I know for every car ever.
That's a great parlor trick right there.
I know. You be like, try me.
Blindfold me, put me in your car, and I'll guarantee you, all you got to do is start it, and I'll know. I can sense the car's gas tank with my psychic powers.
Isn't that crazy?
I love it. I'm going to give you a rock solid 8.5 just because I'd say 85 or 90% of the population has no idea.
I know.
And it's been in front of us for probably, what, a decade or two.
So helpful.
That's a helpful hint. That's a helpful, interesting, mind-blowing fact. Yeah,
that's like a life-changer one, you know? Like, that's one you're going to integrate into your life.
Like tomorrow. And it's when you're not going to forget. It's easy to remember.
Yep.
All right, good score, Melanie. I'm going to give you a solid 8.5 to 9. That was good. That was really good.
8.59? Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And actually, I'm glad I didn't do this on purpose, but I remembered that I think I left out one of the Mandela effects last time that relates to this as well.
We left out a few big ones, yeah.
So I guess this is a good segue. So listeners, friends, definitely go back and listen to episode 1 because we are not going to recount the entirety of examples of the Mandela effect in your daily life. But essentially, long story short, and this is how we ended the last episode, but in 2009, a woman named Fiona Broom noticed that she had this memory of Nelson Mandela dying in jail in the 1980s. And she realized that a lot of other people had this memory as well, when in fact, Mandela actually got out of prison in 1990, and he went on to become the president of South Africa. So she called it the Mandela effect, and she wrote about it on her website. And with that, people started realizing all of these other things, which, Scott, I didn't really thought about that before, but it's really interesting that nobody noticed all of these things until 2009. People started noticing all these, mostly like logos changing. So I'm just going to rapid fire go through these rather than dwell on all of them, but it's things such as the Berenstain Bears. People think it's spelled Berenstein, but now it's spelled Stain. People remember Chick-fil-A being spelled C-H-I-C or C-H-I-K instead of the way it is presently, which is C-H-I-C-K. People remember Oscar Mayer being spelled M-E-Y-E-R. Now it is spelled M-A-Y-E-R. People remember Fruit Loops. They think fruit is spelled F-R-U-I-T, but it's actually F-R-O-O-T. A similar one, but reverse, with Looney Tunes. People remember it being spelled Looney Tunes, T-O-O-N-S, but actually it is Looney Tunes, T-U-N-E-S. There's visual ones like Pikachu. People think he has a black tail. People remember Curious George having a tail. C-3PO, they don't remember him having a silver leg. These are all called the quote Mandela effect. The one that I think I left out last time, that's one of my favorites that blew my mind, was I distinctly remember on the rearview mirror in the car, it saying objects in mirror may be closer than they appear. Is that what you remember?
That's what I remember. I always remember there a may being there.
And so now it says objects in mirror are closer than they appear. And I just remember sitting there reading it and thinking, maybe, like, why maybe? Like, why don't we know? Like, shouldn't it always be closer or not? Like, I remember like reading it and thinking that, but I don't know. Now it says objects in mirror are closer than they appear.
I wonder if that was like, because Wild E. Coyote in the speaking of Looney Tunes was always chasing the Roadrunner, and they would have that little mirror thing up all the time, and the truck would like be closer than it appeared. And I think in the cartoon it said maybe closer than it appeared. Maybe that's it. I'll Google that later.
Well, if it did say that, it'll be gone now.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll find out. I'm gonna look it up. But here, you know what? One of the things we didn't talk about were the flip-flops. Maybe, are we going to get into that at all today?
Yeah, we can.
Here's one that kind of freaked me out a little bit. So according to this guy who's been doing the Mandela Effect YouTube channel, I can't remember his name, but like for 8-9 years now, he says that just a few years back, the Flintstones lost its T and it became the Flintstones with no T. And everyone was like freaking out, like, what happened to the T? Which doesn't make sense because everything's named after stones, like the Flintstones, and Flint is a rock, Mr. Slate. So they all had these rock names. So of course, there would have always been a T, Flintstones. But they said that it went from Flintstones to Flintstones back to Flintstones. That's the flip-flop. I just heard about that, so that kind of blew my mind. But how do you prove that? And, you know, I don't know. That one seems a little sketchy to me, but I've heard about this flip-flop phenomenon.
There's a lot of people on Reddit who say they've experienced the flip-flop, and they'll, like, be making notes and waiting, and things will switch back and forth.
Problem is, you make notes, according to the theory, the notes change.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Now we're getting into, like, people's theories.
The paradox.
About it. So I'm trying to talk, we should go that direction or go our theory.
No, let's get into our stuff. That's the juicy stuff.
Okay. So Scott and I had a moment, which was the reason we now have this podcast right here that we are talking on now, because, and I wish people could have been there with us when we had this moment, because it was like not real life. It felt like a movie scene. But basically
It's going to be very difficult, but you've got to trust us. This like literally organically just started falling into place.
It was so organic. We did not pre-plan this. We did not look this up beforehand. This is just the way it happened. So it was not us looking for something to be a certain way. Because basically, I've been thinking ever since I learned more about this Mandela effect. Oh, the way I first found the Mandela effect was the Tinkerbell dotting the I. So people distinctly remember Tinkerbell in the blue cast, the logo before all the Disney animated films, where it's the blue background with the white castle. They remember Tinkerbell coming out, flying around, dotting the I. There is no Tinkerbell. She's not in that logo. If you find it, you'll probably become famous and rich because you will have like this treasured artifact. In any case, I was thinking about it more, and I was thinking, well, it's weird because it's all these logos and stuff, but then there's the Mandela thing, which is this very intense event that happened. And so I was just thinking about it. I was like, well, maybe somebody went back in time. Maybe originally, and let me just preface all of this to say, this is all just thinking about things and fun. Like Scott and I are not crazy conspiratorial theorist people.
Right. This is just societal fun. Right. We're not making any suppositions or declarations or conspiracies. We're just having fun.
We're just pondering and noticing things. So I was thinking, well, maybe when Mandela died originally in jail, let's say that happened, maybe something happened after that that was bad and they had to change it. Like, so many things could have happened, but regardless, let's say he did originally die in jail. So maybe somebody went back and made it so that he didn't die in jail. So that was like my theory. And so I was telling Scott this, my theory, on the phone, and I was like, well, let's see when Mandela went to jail, because maybe that's like a good benchmark of when they might have gone back and done something. So we looked up when Mandela went to jail, which was 1962. And so we established that sort of as a, like a date to consider, 1962. And then Scott, I think you said, when was Berenstain Bears written? Because that was the one that's really...
Yeah, that was the one that was kind of like embedded in my brain because my mom had read me those books. And I was like, well, okay, well, let's look up the Berenstain Bears. Like, when was it written?
Yeah. So I looked it up and it was written 1962.
Which freaked us out.
Which we had, like, we were like, whoa.
Total freak out moment.
Yeah. So I was like in the Whole Foods parking lot. I remember this distinctly. And then we're like, well, let's look up some other ones.
Yep.
And then this was just so crazy. I couldn't handle it. Okay. So then we decided to look up Fruit of the Loom. So we looked it up. And interestingly, it was actually founded and registered as a trademark in 1851, which is a very long time ago. But then we looked up the timeline of the logos, because it's gone through quite a few different manifestations of the logo. So it's gone through 7 different logos. The fifth time it changed. So when it actually became modern looking, so the way it looks now with a similar font and like a white background, because prior to that it had like a background of like more colorful and a lot of other stuff going on. So would it
be more like a fruit basket almost? Like the fruit was on a plate and encircled. So it looked like a fruit basket versus like the fruit being more free flowing.
there's just more, yeah, there's more context to the logo before. So it did change to the more modern look. And we looked up when that happened, and it was, Scott?
1962.
Yep. So that was Fruit of the Loom. Then we looked up some of the other ones. We looked up Captain Crunch. And Scott, when was Captain Crunch created?
I believe it was 1962.
It was 1963.
Oh.
We looked up Fruit Loops. When was Fruit Loops created?
I'm going to go with 63.
1963. We looked up Oscar Mayer. Now, Oscar Mayer went through quite a few manifestations of things. However, its famous jingle, when people were spelling it, what year?
I remember that. I forget Oscar Mayer, but I'm going to also say 63, I think it was.
1963.
Mm-hmm.
We looked up Chick-fil-A. So Chick-fil-A has gone through quite a few different logos. And the change that happened when they actually, originally it didn't have a dash in it. It was like Chick-fil-A with no, there was a dash between Phil and A, but no dash between Chick and Phil. And then they switched it to add a dash between everything. And they made the last A capitalized. So that logo change, which was the closest to changing Chick because it's adding the dash in between Chick and Phil. What year was that? Do you know?
I believe that one was 64.
No, or it was 1963.
Okay.
Also 1963. First Target store. We looked that up because people remember it, the logo having multiple rings. That was 1962. Looney Tunes. Their logo has gone through quite a few manifestations. That was one that was 1964. So they had a logo change in 1964. And then we also realized just in general that the JFK assassination, because people remember there being six people in the car. That was obviously 1963. So we realized all of this in real time. Basically, like every logo we looked up somehow related to 1962, 1963, maybe 1964.
Yeah. And so he was arrested, I think, right in 62. And then I think went to jail in 64. But just to keep the audience on their toes. So not all of these are going to be 63 or 62 or 64. But the big point is they all seem to happen after 62 and or right around 62.
They're all around the same time.
Yes.
Which is crazy. So, okay. So that alone was very crazy. I remember like 1962 and then looking at Berenstain Bears and it was 1962 and then Fruit of the Loom looking it up and the logo changed in 1962 and then we looked up Captain Crunch and it was 1963. Like literally it just wouldn't stop.
Just kept going.
It was crazy. And so then we were thinking about it and we were like, okay, so 1962, 63, something happened there. So then we were thinking like, well, when do we think somebody, if it was somebody that went back and changed something, like when did that happen? And we were like, well, let's see when people first started talking about the Mandela effect. And that's when we looked up this blogger woman. And it was 2009, like I was saying, that's when she first mentioned it. So people weren't noticing these things until 2009. Okay, so now we got to bring Scott into the story because Scott had a pre-existing theory that might be involved with the Mandela effect. Do you want to talk about CERN?
Yes. So being a bit of a science geek, I'm into physics and kind of been following CERN. And so when the Mandela effect came up and I listened to a few podcasts and read some Reddit threads, a lot of people started saying, oh, it's CERN creating black holes and warps in time and space. So I gave that some consideration, and then I read some articles about CERN, and they in fact did say that they were concerned that it could create black holes and that micro black holes and or fabric in time could be broken by these near speed particles colliding. So I thought, I wonder if it actually could be related. So I then looked up.
Can you tell listeners what CERN is?
Yes. So CERN is the Large Hadron Collider, I believe in Switzerland and between Switzerland and maybe another country. It is, I think, a mile in circumference, and it is the largest, fastest, most powerful collider in the world. So what it does essentially is take particles and smash them together at near the speed of light. And these massive collisions show scientists various interesting parts of matter that are smaller than atoms, right? Like the Bose-Higgs-on, which they call the God particle, for example. And when they smash these together for just a brief moment, there are micro black holes or micro breaks in the space-time fabric. Before they turned it on, there was actual concern, like, could this actually create a black hole or, you know, distort time in some way? Hence where this theory comes from, derives from.
And you can go to their official website. So this is like a government thing. This is not like some crazy conspiracy website. This is CERN's official website. So their website is home.cern. They have a page called Extra Dimensions, Gravitons, and Tiny Black Holes. And there's a lot on this page. But at the very end, it says, microscopic black holes, quote, another way of revealing extra dimensions would be through the production of microscopic black holes. What exactly we would detect would depend on the number of extra dimensions, the mass of the black hole, the size of the dimensions, and the energy at which the black hole occurs. If micro black holes do appear in the collisions created by the LHC, and the LHC is, it's that is the Large Hadron Collider that Scott was referring to, they would disintegrate rapidly in around 10 to the negative 27th seconds. They would decay into standard model or supersymmetric particles, creating events containing an exceptional number of tracks in our detectors, which we would easily spot. Finding more on any of these subjects would open the door to yet unknown possibilities. This is on this website.
Official website.
Like, this is a government thing.
It's an international lab.
It's an international organization.
So that's pretty compelling to the theory, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, they literally say on their website.
Read that last part again. That was really interesting.
It says, if micro black holes do appear in the collisions created by the LHC, they would disintegrate rapidly in around 10 to the negative 27 seconds. They would decay into standard model or supersymmetric particles, creating events containing an exceptional number of tracks in our detectors, which we would easily spot. Finding more on any of these subjects would open the door to yet unknown possibilities.
That's the line that gets me. Yet unknown possibilities. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Especially when we give the timeline. Because...
And Anna says they would detect depend... What exactly we would detect would depend on the number of extra dimensions. This is crazy. So this particle thing basically might be revealing, through the production of microscopic black holes, extra dimensions. And they don't really know what we would find, but basically it opens the door to, quote, unknown possibilities.
The extra dimensions line really blows me away. I mean, that's really interesting.
Yeah. So we decided that it was probably around that 2009 or shortly right before that whoever in our theory went back and made this change in 1962, 1963, that's probably when it happened. Because prior to 2009... people weren't noticing these Mandela effects. And then 2009, people start noticing. So that was probably around the time that somebody, quote, went back and made a change, probably around 1962. So then Scott had that theory that he just talked about with CERN. Did I say, like, let's look up when the first experiment happened? We mutually agreed to look up when the first experiment happened.
I was in my car driving, and I think CERN was around 2009, and you looked it up.
Yes, and so then I went and looked it up. I do remember that. Then I went and looked it up, and the first particle accelerator experiment started September 2008.
Yes.
So right before everybody starts noticing all these things is when CERN, or that accelerator, went live.
Yeah. Crazy.
And actually, interestingly, so I didn't know this at the time. There was a startup in 2008, but then there was an incident
Oh.
that caused it to be shut down for repairs.
Did it say what month in 2008?
Okay, so in September 2008 is when they were turning it on. September 10th was the first time that proton beams were circulated in the LHC, because on September 19th, just 9 days after that, a fault occurred due to a faulty electrical connection. This resulted in a helium leak and a failure of one of the superconducting magnets. It led to the shutdown of the LHC for over a year to make the necessary repairs and safety improvements. They made the repairs, the upgrades, and then it was restarted in November 2009. So
I gotta say, the incident word is always an interesting one.
I know.
Incident.
Always not saying anything, but was saying.
Pretty vague. what was this giant dimension they hadn't counted on? I don't...
Faulty magnet? I don't...
It's interesting.
So, just put that out there. Okay, friends. I have some mind-blowing and scary facts about your skincare and makeup. Did you know that there's essentially no regulation of skincare and makeup in the US, and that most skincare and makeup products are high in endocrine disruptors, which mess with your hormones? These are compounds which are linked to hormonal disruption, thyroid issues, fertility issues, autoimmune conditions, and even cancer. And they are rampant in our skincare and makeup. That's right. When you're putting on that skincare and makeup to supposedly support your skin and help it look better, you actually could be doing damage to your skin and your body and your health. It is a massive problem today. And ladies, if you're thinking of having children, these compounds actually pass through the placenta into the newborn, setting up our children with a toxic burden from birth. And these compounds can last in our system for years and years. In one study testing conventional lipsticks, for example, most were found to be high in lead, and the half-life of lead is up to 30 years. That means when you put on some conventional lipstick, 30 years later, maybe half of that lead has left your bones. There's also a legal loophole from the 1960s where companies can put whatever they want in products and don't have to tell you what it is. They just put it under the label fragrance. This is why safe skincare and makeup is so important to me, and I am so passionate about a company called Crunchy. Their standards are impeccable. Crunchy products contain no toxic ingredients, which they define as any ingredient known to cause harm or health hazard based on available ingredient data and research. Each ingredient actually undergoes a 30-step screening criteria for safety. All the products are gluten-free, with third-party lab testing comparable to food standards. A ton of their products are non-GMO, just look for the badge on their website, and all of their products are vegan, except for their lip oil, which contains organic beeswax from humanely sourced regenerative beekeeping. All of their products are also Leaping Bunny certified cruelty-free with no animal testing and made in the USA, with the exception of wooden pencils and accessories, which are made in American-owned factories in Germany with extremely high social, ethical, and environmental standards. And they use sustainable and environmentally conscious packaging with no plastic for primary packaging. Their products are also incredible. They make, hands down, the best mascara I have ever tried. Their Golden Light Multi-Peptide Facial Serum will make your skin glow. They also have an incredible Daylight Facial Cream and Nightlight Facial Cream, and an awesome makeup cleansing balm. You can check out their foundation as well, and their incredible sunscreen products. If you want safe sunscreen, you've got to try Crunchy. You can shop with me at crunchy.com/Melanie Avalon. That's crunchy.com/Melanie Avalon. And new customers can use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 to get 10% off eligible orders. New customers with me will also receive a gift from me after your first purchase. So again, for the ultimate in safe skincare and beauty, go to crunchy.com/Melanie Avalon and use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 for 10% off, as well as a free gift from me. For all the latest discounts, specials, and announcements from me in the world of safe skincare and clean beauty, definitely get on my email list. That's at melanieavalon.com/cleanbeauty. For all the latest text updates, just text skincare, one word, to 877-861-8318. That's the word skincare to 877-861-8318. Okay, where should we go from? Where do we go from here? Well, there's the theory about people's age. With our theory, technically, if you were born after 2008, we should probably say 2009 to be safe.
Yeah, 2009.
Then you shouldn't have any Mandela effect memories.
Yes. So if you were born after 2009, basically all of the things that they say the way they are, that's the way you should remember them.
Because you've only were alive.
If you were born before then, right. And you probably needed a few years. So anything like in the early 2000s or before, you probably will have memories that will be long lasting enough to stick. So I think if you're born after 2009, for sure you should have no memories. And between like 2000 and down, you might have memories, and we'd love to see.
Well, lots of people have the memories.
You know, what that age break looks like. Well, is there an age break though? That would be fascinating if we can figure that out.
Yeah. So if listeners have kids that are like 13, because it's right now it's 2023.
Yes, 13, 14 at the oldest. You know,
13, 14.
Do they have any of these Mandela effect memories?
Yeah. If you got 13 or 14 year olds, see if they have these memories.
Especially with like Cap'n Crunch and Chick-fil-A, because those are ones that they see all the time.
Yeah, especially with the cereals, because yeah. So the Chick-fil-A's, the cereals, the Star Wars, maybe if they're Star Wars. If anybody has like a Star Wars junkie kid that loves Star Wars, you could ask them about the C-3PO. If any of your kids are into Pokemon and they're 13 or 14 or younger, you can ask them about Pikachu.
And it would be really interesting if you had kids that were, you know, one that's 14, ones that maybe in their 20s, 25, 26, and see if they have different memories.
Yeah, and compare.
That would be really interesting.
Yes. So, okay, I interrupted. So, Scott, you were going.
Yeah, so I'm going through sort of the chronology here. And in 62 is basically when he first goes to jail, Nelson Mandela. Now, there were a total of, I think it was 9 people that were accused of basically doing nothing wrong. They were trying to stop apartheid, essentially, right? Which will, again, become interesting. But what is so fascinating is that the only person out of these 9 people to not get convicted and was released and discharged in 1964... all were convicted of sabotage except for Bernstein, spelled B-E-R-N-S-T-I-N. Now, that just strikes me as another really interesting coincidence that the Bernstein Bears, now the Bernstein Bears, are also part of this conspiracy. And the only person that got let go was Bernstein. So it's just kind of just, not that that means anything, it's just these continual weird odd coincidences of names and dates. It's just very fascinating.
It's super weird. And so my theory about all of this is I don't think it was just logos that changed and, you know, names of books that changed. I think a lot of stuff could have changed, but the only things everybody would collectively remember would be things that everybody was seeing all the time. So it could have been like, you know, you remember at this one day in the past before this all happened that your room looked a certain way. And if you were to, that doesn't even really translate. The point is like a cute little small events could have happened in your life that quote changed, but you would have no idea, no way to verify that or to fact check that or to even notice that it was different. But the only things that everybody would remember would be logos, because that's the thing where everybody's seeing it all the time and can verify that it's different now. Do you get what I'm saying?
Correct. I agree completely. There's a lot of things that we would never notice about individuals and what could have happened or would have happened in everyday life that we're not going to notice because it's not sort of mainstream. So I do think that the changes, if you in fact believe any of this or that it's real, yeah, I think the changes would be widespread. And,
yeah,
and a lot of micro changes within individuals' lives and big changes in society that people just otherwise wouldn't notice because there wasn't a logo or a tagline or something that people would remember.
Exactly. Because I've seen comments where people are like, really, it changed reality and the way we notice it is the Fruit of the Loom no longer has the cornucopia. Like, that seems just silly. But it's because the logos are the things that everybody remember.
Right.
And would notice.
The analogy for my sci-fi geek friends is in The Matrix. How did you know the glitch? The deja vu with the cat.
Wait, what was that part? I haven't seen that in forever.
So in The Matrix, when they're in The Matrix, Neo says, wow, that was weird. Deja vu. And they all turn and look at him and say, what? And he says, I just saw a black cat. Went by twice. Shook its head. And they said, the same black cat or a different black cat? He goes, it's the same black cat. And then they all panic because they realize that The Matrix has changed and they're onto them.
Oh, I forgot about that part. I got to rewatch those movies. Those are so great.
Oh, The Matrix is filled with little Easter eggs.
Love The Matrix. So, yeah. So just stuff to consider there with the logos and the dates and all the things. And then as a final piece to all of this, Scott brought up something really interesting about the end of the Mayan calendar. I don't know if everybody remembers the whole drama when we thought the world was going to end. Scott, did you think the world was going to end when that happened?
I did not think the world was going to end, but I was curious to see if anything crazy would happen.
I actually had a party at my house because I always have a Christmas party every year. Back then, I used to. So on December 21st, because it was supposed to end at midnight, right, of December 21st, 2012?
Yes, that was, well, technically, it was the official start of a new cycle of the Earth, whatever that means. But it was, you know, for the media and the press and the hype, it was the end of the world. But technically, the Mayans said it was the beginning of a new phase or cycle of the Earth.
I just remember I had the best theme. Because my Christmas parties are always themed. So that year, it was called an apocalyptic Christmas party.
That is a kick-ass theme. I have to give you that.
Oh, it was epic. You know, maybe we should have show notes just so I can put in pictures because I found my Facebook album of it. It is so great, the theming. Everything's like red and kind of scary. And we always would play, you know, what's it called? White Elephant, where you bring the present. You know what I'm talking about? That game.
Yeah, it's the white elephant. You bring like a goofy gag present.
Yeah, so I'm looking at one of the presents that somebody brought, and it says on the present, it says apocalypse care package, and then it says to, and it just says question mark, question mark, question mark. It says from Fate, and then it says at the bottom, good luck on Friday, sincerely, Fate.
That's a great gift for that party.
Oh my gosh. So in any case, yeah, December 21st, 2012. And Scott, what did you just realize in real time happened in 2012?
Yeah. So interestingly enough, on or around December 21st, which is the exact date of the Mayan calendar, 2012, December 21st, there would be a phenomena that would occur. And it just so happened that in 2012, in July, they thought they had discovered the Higgs boson collider. And in November, had a conference in Kyoto to announce that they think that they had discovered enough evidence on the new particle, which is not a pseudo particle. It is a negative parity molecule, which means in physics, a transformation or an inversion. Or a flip.
I really can't wait until the book I'm reading right now gets to this part because I feel like I'm going to learn a lot.
That's pretty crazy. So the time, again, 2012, and there's an inversion. And then, you know, you could argue that maybe we are entering a new cycle. Maybe it began in 2012. There was a flip.
So to clarify, is it that they found something that they just hadn't found it before 2012, or they think it started in 2012?
They had not discovered the particles or enough evidence of the particles until they did this experiment in July, and then subsequent experiments, and then finally collect the data, had a conference in November, and announced it officially in December that they had found the Higgs boson, which wow. created these inversion particles, which is just crazy. But they first theorized it in guess what date? 1963.
That's crazy.
Crazy.
Wait, they first
theorized the Higgs boson in 1963.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And then just as a little cherry on the, what is the phrase? On the sundae?
Cherry on top.
Cherry on top. I'm like,
but it is on the sundae.
I'm like, ice cream.
Would you like a sundae with a cherry on top?
Cake, icing. cherry. So what little celebration happened around CERN?
Well, very interestingly enough, there was a dedication to CERN with statue included to the god Shiva. And so if you're wondering who Shiva is, she is the god or goddess. She was the consort, is Deva. Deva has taken on many forms in the past, including Kael, the goddess of death, and Seti, S-A-T-I. She's most known for the goddess of destruction and life, circle of life.
Yeah, says the it is a metaphor. The statue of this Hindu cosmic dancer at CERN is a metaphor for modern physics.
Which I find interesting that they would use ancient goddess Shiva, who had a lot to do with sort of being the goddess of both life and death, cycle of life. She's known as the goddess of destruction, goddess of life, etc.
It says, the god who danced the universe into existence preserves it and will one day destroy it.
Destroy it. Shiva is known as the destroyer of worlds.
It is an artistic metaphor for CERN's study of the cosmic dance of subatomic particles.
Or the cosmic dance of, you know, the beginning of stars, the death of stars, or the beginning of creating a 2012 and not. So that's just, it's just kind of random and interesting. But what also caught my attention is if you do the root word CERN and look up a Celtic god, I think it's Cernonius, something to that effect. It's a Celtic god. Same exact principles. He is the god of the cycle of life and death. So kind of a theme. Kind of a theme.
So what does CERN stand for something, or is that what it's named after?
No, CERN stands for something, but it's like CERN. A weird nuclear thing. It's like something nuclear.
Council European for the research, for nuclear research.
Yeah. I mean, to name it CERN, like Council on European Research of Nuclear, it's like you went out of your way to create that acronym, seems to me. Look, is there any truth to this? I have no idea. But it is fascinating that all of these dates align, not align perfectly, but they're very close, that people have these theories and have the theory about CERN, and that many of these dates kind of just coincide. It's just very fascinating. I see why people are so enamored with this theory, because it is very interesting. And now that we've kind of dug a deep dive into these dates, one has to wonder, you know, was there some grander purpose, for good or not, of the arrest and or of the changing of the timeline, if that in fact happened?
Yeah, and I think it's just to bring it back to the most reality state of reality. What we know on the CERN official website, it talks about the potential of creating microscopic black holes, which could create different dimensions. We know they did their first experiment in 2008, going into 2009. We know in 2009 is when people started recognizing all of these logos changing. And if you go back to listen to our first episode, we talk about studies that have been done on the Mandela effect. Well, there's not a ton, but there was a really interesting psychological study where, you know, basically people all have the same false memory. It's not random. And people will also free draw from memory the false memories without even being shown options. And then we know that a majority of these Mandela effects all happened around the same time, 1962, 1963, 1964. And that's the time of Mandela's arrest and going to jail. And that the big event that started this all is Fiona Broom remembering Mandela dying in jail, which a lot of other people remember as well.
Yeah.
So I think all of that is mostly facts, what I just said, you know?
Those are mostly facts, yes. Those are mostly facts.
So do what you will with it. Do some thinking.
Drink it in.
We would love to hear people's thoughts. Oh, so by the way, if you're enjoying the show, honestly, the best way to support it, I promise, super easy. If you go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, and or preferably and, write a brief Apple Podcast review. It helps so much. And we love to hear from you guys. So if you want to include in the review a mind-blowing fact or a mind-blowing experience, we would love to hear it. Maybe we'll share it on the show. Also, feel free to share with us what Mandela effect you most experience and you would really like hang your hat on. Like, what's the one that you could just swear it used to be a different way? What's your most present one, Scott? Is it Berenstain for you?
The one that I feel the most strong about is probably the Berenstain Bears one. Yes. That one, my mom read me those books. I'm struggling with that one.
I think mine's Chick-fil-A.
A lot of people's is Chick-fil-A. My son is Chick-fil-A. He can't get over it. He still thinks the signs are wrong.
It's so funny. So yes, well, this has been so amazing, so fun. We have a very awesome topic for next week. And as a teaser for next week, we have something mind-blowing to share about the potential power of dancing. And when dancing gets real dark, real quick.
This is dark dancing.
Dark dancing. Oh, man. Oh, I'm excited. Okay. Well, Scott, this has been absolutely amazing, and I will talk to you next week.
I hope I can sleep tonight. My mind is racing.
Mine too.
Talk to you next week, Mel.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Mind Blown podcast. Don't worry, your brain can store about 1 million gigabytes of data. That's enough memory to record continuous TV shows for over 300 years. That said, psychology suggests that your memory is actually just your memory of your last memory, leading to a process called memory distortion, where your memories change over time. If you're enjoying the show, remember to subscribe and write a brief review in Apple Podcasts, and definitely let us know what you find most mind-blowing.